Introducing the new four-course Festa Italiana starting at $13.99 from Olive Garden.
What could be better than Golden Corral's piping hot and delicious yeast rolls? How about six free yeast rolls to take home?
The Yumbo Hot Ham and Cheese from the 70s is back. Yumbo. Hot Black Forest ham and melted cheese. And it's on the Burger King 2 for $5 menu.
Are you hungry now? Maybe in the mood for a burger? That is a question Brian Wansink has been looking into. Do food ads work? Wansink is director of the Food and Brand Lab at Cornell University and author of Mindless Eating, Why We Eat More Than We Think. He's with us from Chicago. Brian, welcome.
Well, it's great to be with you.
Well, we see these food ads everywhere all the time, on TV, on billboards, online, even on social media these days. How effective are they in getting us to eat the foods that are being advertised?
Well, they're really effective in getting us to eat the foods they advertise if we eat in that category to begin with. So if we see, for instance, a fast food ad, it can be very effective in getting somebody who already eats fast food to go to place X instead of to eat chicken or whatever else they'd eat. But they're not quite as effective at getting somebody who wasn't really interested in the category to begin with to jump in.
Why not?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people have lines that they draw about what they do and what they don't do. So, for instance, there's 2/3 of the population of adults don't smoke and about 2/3 don't drink any more than one drink a year. Yet these people see tons of smoking ads. They see tons of liquor ads. It's like you almost screen it out if it's not something that is part of your typical routine.
So they know that they're advertising just to people who are likely to eat at the restaurant.
Yeah, that's where a lot of the action happens. And you know, it's interesting when you see these really crazy new product introductions like the Double Down Burger, the Four Burger, Burger King Hamburger. Even in most of these cases, they don't really expect to sell a lot of these four patty burgers. But what that does is it gives kind of cool news to that chain or to that restaurant that makes people say, geez, I wasn't even thinking of that place. Hey, let's go there.
Well, let's pretend like they're marketing to somebody who is likely to go to that restaurant. Do these ads make us overeat? Do they make us eat more than we otherwise would?
If it's a type of advertising that sort of implies something healthier, a health claim, like not now, try our light McLean sandwich, whatever the case is. We know in those cases that anything that suggests healthfulness does cause us to over-order side items.
I'm thinking of that episode of Seinfeld where they all think they're eating fat-free frozen yogurt, but in fact, it turns out it's not fat-free. So you're saying if they make us think that it's the healthy option, we are more likely to overeat.
Yeah, and for two reasons. First of all, when we think of something as being low fat, we assume it's lower in calories. It's really, in most cases, only about 11% lower in calories because they do take fat out, but they replace it with sugar. And so the problem ends up being is we overeat it because we think it has fewer calories than it actually has. But second of all, we also overeat it because we end up wanting to reward ourselves for being a good boy or a good girl by ordering the right choice. And in general, if somebody eats a low-fat item, they eat between 40 and 44% more calories than if they just would have eaten the regular version.
So does food advertising need to be regulated further?
Food advertising, if it's used well, can actually turn the tide in a lot of the poor choices that are being made. Now, I'll give you kind of an example. We do a lot of work in the school lunchrooms with something called the Smarter Lunchroom Movement. And there's been a lot of talk that says, hey, you know, we shouldn't have any brands in schools. You know, it's evil. It's evil, I tell you.
Yeah.
And one of the things we did was we said, well, let's take a look at branding. We took cookies and we took carrots. And if we put this little Elmo sticker on a cookie, it doesn't increase the sales of wrapped cookies at all because people like cookies to begin with. And, you know, 80% of the kids will take it. And if you put a sticker on, 81% take it. No real increase. But you put that sticker on a bag of carrots, and it triples in the amount of kids who take carrots and eat it.
Would that work for adults, that the food labeling will actually make a difference in how much we like the food that we're eating?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we've done – what happens is our taste is tremendously subjective. You know this when you're actually – out to dinner with a friend, and they say, hey, taste this appetizer. Does this taste a little salty to you? You'll taste it looking for the salt. But we also know it when a waiter or waitress says, hey, we have our Tuscan fire-roasted red peppers. You kind of go, oh, man, that is going to be great. And we find simply adding a descriptive word to foods end up making people about 27% more likely to take them, but it also increases their taste ratings after they finished.
Hmm. So what can consumers do then to not be so influenced by the labeling, to actually be making choices based on what's good for them, what they like, rather than being hypnotized into buying something that or eating something or enjoying something that they don't really want?
Well, one thing you can do is if you are trying to estimate whether something's healthy or how many calories are in it, you can take your best guess as to how many calories you think is in it. If you double that estimate, you're going to be a lot closer to the reality, okay? What you can also end up doing is in a lot of these cases with restaurant foods, it's hard to tell what's going to be healthy in a restaurant, but here's the key. If you go to a waitress or waiter in a restaurant and you say, look, tell me the two or three items on your menu that are the lightest and most popular. What you'll do is she or he will point out a couple things that you would have never thought of that are actually really good and will keep you from being tricked by sort of words. But what you can't ask is, can you tell me two or three of your healthiest items? Because all he or she is going to do is point at the salads, and you're not going to get that really great ham that might have been prepared in a way that's really lower in fat than you would have otherwise guessed.
Well, and frankly, at some restaurants where you can see the calorie counts on these things, the salads have just as much as the burger and fries. But we'll leave that for another day. You published another book this September, Slim by Design, Mindless Eating Solutions for Everyday Life. And the premise is that instead of telling people what they should and should not be eating, we should instead be thinking about tailoring our environment so that we're naturally inclined to eat healthier. How does that work?
Well, there's really small ways that we can do this. I mean, we find, for instance, that even if you have a cluttered kitchen, you're going to eat 44% more snacks than somebody who has a clear, clean kitchen. So there's a lot of these changes that people can make. If actually, for each of these five environments, whether it be our home or restaurants, where we shop, where we work, and where kids go to school, we have 100-point scorecards that show you whether your home is making you fat by design or slim by design. And it's a whole lot easier to simply serve your pasta off the stove or off the counter and eat 30% less than it is to have it right in front of you where you're going to eat seconds and thirds and fourths. And that's why we say it's a lot easier to become slim by design than slim by willpower.
So don't bring that food over to the table. Leave it on the stove?
Yeah. And it tremendously benefits men more than women because men tend to have that tendency towards seconds and thirds to a greater extent than women do.
How do we get our coworker, who is a wonderful baker, to stop making brownies for everybody's birthdays that we then need to eat?
That's right. Oh, that is wonderful. You know, one of the things that we end up doing in my lab is we have fruit bowls all over the place, and at some point when there's fruit bowls that are full of stuff, you know, bringing in a big platter of cookies for somebody's birthday is kind of the equivalent of bringing a bong into a boardroom. People just let you stretch.
Well, you know, in Colorado, maybe that's what they do. Brian Wansink, director of the Cornell University Food and Brand Lab and the author of Slim by Design, Mindless Eating Solutions for Everyday Life. Thank you so much for joining us.
It was great to be with you. Thank you.